Hey everybody, before we get started, this week's book deals with some pretty heavy topics that are unavoidable because of the nature of the book, the plot of the book, the subject of the book, the title of the book. So we will be discussing, not in depth, but we will be mentioning things like school shootings, intimate partner violence, things like that. Not, again, in any gory details, but it will come up just because that's the nature of the game. So that's just a little fair warning ahead of time, and I'll see you in the episode. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are taking a step back in time. That's right, we are heading back to the past to cover a book that I skipped in, I think, 2020 or 2021 when I was supposed to go back to it, never did. Like, I skipped it once before, and then I skipped it again, and now I'm like, you know what? We're hitting 10 years in a few months. It's time to start doing some house cleaning, trimming those hedges, pruning those bushes, and taking care of some of the chaff and covering the books that were I honestly just didn't want to put in the extra work. Also, I had been trying to secure a certain guest for it that kept falling through. Eventually, I just said, hang it all. I'm gonna just cover this book. And what is this book? What's the book I've been avoiding? And why does it sit so strangely in our timeline? This week's book is The Berenstain Bears and No Guns Allowed. Big chapter book from, oh God, when was this from? When was this from? 2000. So this is a 25-year-old book. We have a 25-year-old book here that I've been avoiding because the subject is touchy. Berenstain Bears and No Guns Allowed is one of those Berenstain Bears books that tends to pop up in discussions that amount to very little, usually no more than just someone saying, can you believe they made a Berenstain Bears book about this? And like, that's it. That's usually as far as the discussion goes. Or it's just a breakdown of the illustrations, or just picking apart how goofy it is that the Berenstain Bears are trying to talk about, presumably, gun safety or gun violence. Going back and rereading this book, taking a look at the different plot threads in it, I think it's a complex novel that really, I know it sounds weird to say that about a Berenstain Bears book, but you've been there with me in the past for these big chapter books. It's a more complex story than the title gives it credit for. It's got basically two threads running through it that kind of come together at the end. One about guns specifically, and the other one about the culture of violence. The culture of violence that permeates American society, or in this case, Bear Country society, a culture of violence that is a very real theory, a very real thing. So before we get started on the plot of the book, we just want to cover what I mean when I say culture of violence. The culture of violence theory is a theory that is an extension of the theory of structural violence, which is, definition is, it's a form of violence wherein some social structure or social institution may harm people by preventing them from needing their basic needs or rights. And culture of violence theory developed out of that. The concept of violence being ingrained in Western society and culture. And it started in the 20th century, usually with the proliferation of mass media and sort of hysteria over violence in the media, but that kind of triggered it. I'm talking about not just movies and TV. I'm talking about comic books, leading into the 70s with video games. But the theory itself suggests that violence isn't just an individual act, but it's a product of cultural norms, values, and practices that normalize or glorify aggression within a society. And the idea is that exposure to violence in all sorts of forms, media, social interactions, systemic practices, creates an environment where violence becomes an accepted or learned behavior. It focuses on media influence, violent content in, you know, TV and movies, video games, music, and how that may desensitize people to violence or influence or model aggressive behaviors. Social learning. Culture of violence theory highlights that individuals learn behavior through observation and imitation. So when violence is rewarded or goes unpunished, like even in a movie, it reinforces the idea that aggression is acceptable, not only acceptable, but effective. Systemic factors. So looking past just the media that we read and watch and play, there are structural elements, socioeconomic inequality, lack of access to education, just historical context, like the history of a community, of a people, that just sort of perpetuates a cycle of violence within a community. And finally, the cumulative effects of a culture saturated with violent imagery or practices that normalizes aggression as an acceptable form of social interaction and problem solving, which leads to intolerance of violent acts when witnessed in others, in interpersonal relationships within communities, and even as far as like our policymakers, the decisions they make. The more normalized violence is to a person, the more we accept when our leaders react violently, or our intimate partners react violently, our friends react violently, our children react violently. It's the idea that through seeing violent content and having it normalized in front of you repeatedly doesn't necessarily make people more violent, but it makes them more accepting of the violence they witness and the notion that violence is a first stop answer to problems. Culture of violence. So it emphasizes the societal and cultural roots of violence, suggesting that violence is cultivated and perpetuated through a combination of media, social norms, and systemic issues. And you can use it to look at, you know, bullying rates, crime rates, and the impact that violent entertainment has on behavior. So that is the culture of violence. And I don't bring this up. Just because this is something that sort of came into my head. Obviously, I'm not that smart or well-read. Now, I bring up culture of violence. I looked up culture of violence. I read a few papers because the first chapter of our book, the first chapter of the Berenstain Bears, No Guns Allowed, is the culture of violence. Chapter one is called the culture of violence. This is something that was on people's minds in the 90s, in the early 2000s. People were talking about the influence of music lyrics, of violent content on television, children's exposure to violent cartoons and TV shows, especially in the 90s with the proliferation of Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers. We started seeing kids' entertainment being focused squarely on fighting as a problem-solving technique. And there was concern. You're going to, well, we'll talk about it in a bit, but you're going to hear from different sources, whether or not people believe that media influences violence. And the answer isn't easy because there have been no studies that are completely unbiased. Or it's one of those things where it's hard to set a control group. You'd have to like raise children in an airplane hangar in order to like completely control them. You have to take so many factors into consideration beyond the media that's viewed. But we'll talk about that in a sec. But let's talk about first what this book is about. The Berenstain Bears and No Guns Allowed is about the culture of violence at Bear Country School and in Bear Country in particular. The teachers have noticed that the students are becoming more and more aggressive in their play. There's a lot more gun play going on between not just like Too Tall and his gang, but between, you know, Brother and Fred and even like Ferdy Factuals getting involved in like sort of more aggressive play. And they really differentiate, but also combine the notion that aggressive play isn't just playing cops and robbers. They bring up in the book that, like, well, we've always played cops and robbers. Nothing bad happened to us. Like, Papa Bear is like, we used to play cops and robbers, and it was fine. It's just a game. And it's sort of this, no, it's cumulative, and aggression comes out not just in play patterns, but in the way children interact with each other, and people interact with each other. As we'll see, this isn't just about kids. In fact, one of the first examples we get is Milton Chubb yelling at Too Tall because teacher Bob decides that at one point that one of the reasons the students are sort of getting out of hand is because they form these cliques. And so he's trying to break up the cliques by having students go back to the seats they were assigned on the first day of school. Too Tall resists, and Milton Chubb stands up and responds in a way that Milton Chubb has never responded before. He tells Too Tall, "Didn't you hear me, moron? Shut your mouth and do what Teacher Bob told you." And even Too Tall is like, holy cats, what's happening here? Like, this is unlike Milton. They determined that Milton, who is a school wrestler, if we remember Massive Milton from, I don't remember which book it was, the book where Massive Milton was introduced. Milton is introduced. He's not unintelligent, but he's slow in behavior. I'm not using that as a commentary on his mental acuity. I'm just saying that Milton is a very gentle, very, very paced individual. And he reveals himself to be an incredible wrestler. However, the coach Rismeyer does point out that since it's not called WWF or WWE in this, it's called Grapplemania. It's not WrestleMania. It's Grapplemania in Bear World. Milton, more of the kids have been watching Grapplemania, and that's led them to become more aggressive in their fighting style. So even though Milton has been a wrestler this whole time, which is a somewhat violent sport, they notice that his approach to it has stopped being the controlled Milton that we're used to seeing, the very, like, tactical, you know, using his weight to overpower his opponents. And now he's becoming more violent in his training, and that has some of the teachers concerned because you're not supposed to do that, Milton. That's not how wrestling actually works. Says he was wearing a Grapplemania shirt with a big fist holding up a bolt of lightning, and it just causes a lot of problems. So he and Too Tall get in a big argument. Teacher Bob slams his hand on his desk. I have a picture of that somewhere. He slams his hand on his desk. It's Teacher Bob, angrier than we've ever seen him before, responding to the anger that he's seeing in the students, tells the kids to sit down. Milton, sit down immediately, and the rest of you move to your proper seats. So this is an issue. The students are becoming more and more aggressive. They've clicked off, like they've divided into cliques, and it's affecting the teachers. So that's kind of the teachers. Teacher Bob's always pretty easygoing, kind of lets the kids do what they want. But now it's getting out of hand. So there's this notion set up in the beginning of the story that there could be many different causes of the children's aggression. They're watching more violent TV. They're playing more violent video games. We see at one point that even though they're not allowed to have guns at school, Too Tall and his gang have learned how to fashion guns out of sticks and are using them to play. It's this video game that they talk about that sounds horrifying. Where is it? So Teacher Bob sees them with their sticks that they're using as guns, and he says, Too Tall says, "Gee whiz, Teach, we're just playing Firing Squad." "Firing Squad? Yeah, Firing Squad, the hot new video game. It's fabulous. Here's how it works. You see, you're the Firing Squad, and give me those guns. Oh, branches, get over the fence into the schoolyard." And I love the fact that in Bear Country, there is a video game that is nothing but a firing squad. I guess that's it. I guess the game is that you and your friends are a firing squad. I guess one of you doesn't have a loaded gun, but you don't know which one it is. And then you shoot a blindfolded guy who's smoking a cigarette. I guess that's firing squad. Sounds problematic. I would say it's problematic. That's a problematic game. Here in Bear Country. So yeah, maybe do something about that specific one. Maybe do something about that one game, because Firing Squad doesn't sound like a very kid-friendly game to be playing. So Teacher Bob and the other teachers decide to have a meeting. Come one, come all, to an important meeting. Subject, the growing culture of violence in Bear Country. And here's what it says. I'll pull it up for you because it's a great flyer. "Be it proposed, television, movies, video games, and gun violence are having a negative effect on our cubs. The time tonight at 8 p.m. Give the parents a little more than a day's warning. The place, the auditorium at Bear Country School. Come join in this important discussion. Speakers will include Mayor Horace J. Honeypot and Chief of Police Bruno. Be there." So the teachers have decided to have this meeting. And at the same time, Teacher Bob has decided that they are going to study inventions. So you see, this is all sort of coming. Well, I guess you don't see it right now, but this is all going to come together. Teacher Bob has announced that the students are going to be paired up and they're going to have to choose an invention from history and prove and show and demonstrate the history of this invention, but also show how it is an important invention that has affected bears since it was invented, how it changed the world. Too Tall wants to do a flushing toilet, which I think is probably the most incredible idea Too Tall has ever had. Ferdy Factual is unimpressed. So they've established also in this book that Too Tall and Ferdy are always at each other's throats, which we've seen in the past. Ferdy is unimpressed. Too Tall has decided that he's going to do the flushing toilet. I don't understand why Ferdy Factual, who is one of the smartest cubs in bear country, and not just knows a lot of facts like Cousin Fred does, but Ferdy Factual also understands science within a cultural and historical context. We know that from a book we read just recently, where Ferdy Factual did the theory of relativity for his science project, but he did it just to expand his knowledge. Ferdy Factual should know, and Teacher Bob acknowledges that the flushing toilet actually is a pretty important invention in the history of bear country. You can cover the flushing toilet and not have it be a gross out subject, because the invention of the flushing toilet allowed bathrooms to be moved from the out of doors into houses. That, along with the septic tank system, changed the way people used the bathroom, which may seem funny and gross, but it had a massive impact on the way houses were built, the way plumbing was internal, all of a sudden there had to be sewage plumbing in cities and towns, flushable toilets. They had to figure out how to keep toilets from exploding from buildups of gas, which is why you have the trap and the pipe goes down and then comes back up. How to keep houses from smelling with the smell of the toilet. You ever wonder why your bathroom doesn't smell, even though it's connected directly to sewage? They had to figure that out. Like, there's all these cool things with the history of flushing toilets. And I hate the fact that Too Tall kind of gets shut down by everyone over this, because it's a fascinating subject. What ends up happening, of course, is that in order to keep the cliques broken up, Teacher Bob decides that he's going to pair the students up himself. And Ferdy ends up getting paired with Too Tall. That's where this all goes. But before then, we end up having the town meeting. Come one, come all to the town meeting. So it's Mr. Honeycomb who put out the notice. All of Bear Town shows up, and they start arguing over the nature, well, the culture, the subject, the growing culture of violence in Bear Country. So Teacher Bob, puts up a sign, and he's like, how do we know that there's a growing culture of violence in Bear Country? And he's like, well, we've seen it. We've seen the steady growth of rudeness, threats, name-calling, and violent play among the cubs of Bear Country School. Now, here's the important part. And he picks up his pointer. He's all, be it proposed. Television, movies, video games, and gun violence are having a negative effect on our cubs. That's what we're here to discuss. Then the police chief gets up, and he's like, look, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not an expert. I'm a cop. But I'm a member of the police force, and I'm a father to Babs Bruno. I'm taking this culture of violence thing very seriously, especially the matter of gun safety. There have already been a couple of cases in Big Bear City where cubs have brought guns to school. Real live loaded guns. Now, let's stop here. This is 2000. This would have been being written before Columbine really brought this to our attention, but it came out right after Columbine. So it is a subject that people were intensely talking about, guns in schools. What I appreciate about this is that Police Chief Bruno has said, like, this is something that we're starting to see in the city. We've seen growing gun violence in schools in the city. Kids actually brought real guns to school. And I do want to pause for a second and point out that growing up, having a gun and a gun rack on your truck at school, no one commented. I grew up in Texas. Like, that was just a thing. You don't do it anymore. But when I was a kid, yeah, some kids just, you had your gun in the gun rack. I don't think you were supposed to, but if you got caught with it, like if they were like, if the cop who went around the parking area saw it, you just have to like go take it home. Like, that's it. Like, it wasn't a big deal because guns at school wasn't even a thing. So people start reacting to this. Big Bear City, wow. And it, you know, and so they start worrying, what if this comes to our town? Something will happen in this story. Something happens in this story that sort of brings it home. But there is this idea of, we live in a nice place. We live in an area where things like this don't happen. Things like that happen in the city. They happen in large urban areas. They happen in poorer communities. We don't have to worry about that in our nice little formerly agrarian, somewhat suburban little town of Bear Town. That's a big Bear City problem. But what Chief Bruno is saying is like, no, this is a thing that is starting to grow, and I want to nip it in the bud right now. And so, if this is related to the notion of a culture of violence in Bear Country, let's talk about it and see if we can't come up with a solution. This also gets Mama started on her worry, because Mama doesn't like guns at all. So then Mayor Honeypot gets up, and in his sort of speech impediment style that doesn't translate well to text, he waffles. In fact, Grizzly Gramps calls him an old mugwump, which means a politician who sits on the fence with his mug on one side and his wump on the other. And I did look up mugwump just to make sure it wasn't actually a horrible slur. It does come from an Algonquin word, but it means... The mugwumps were Republican political activists in the United States who were intensely opposed to political corruption. They were never formally organized. They famously switched parties from the Republican Party by supporting Democratic candidate Grover Cleveland in the 1884 United States presidential election. They switched because they rejected the long history of corruption associated with Republican candidate James G. Blaine. In a close election, the mugwumps claimed they made the difference in New York State and swung the election to Cleveland. The jocular word mugwump, noted as early as 1832, is from the Algonquin mugquump, important person, kingpin, war leader, implying that the mugwumps were sanctimonious or holier than thou. They thought they were above it all. So it's not actually what Grizzly Gramps says it means. It does say, though, that by the 1884 campaign, they had been portrayed as fence sitters because they went back and forth from Democrats to Republicans as the wind changed. They're with their mug on the one side of the fence and their rump on the other, or wump. That's a folk etymology. Like, that's a backwards etymology. That's not actually where the word came from. So Grizzly Gramps does not know, but I just told you all. But he is right in that Horace J. Honeypot won't come down on either side. He's just like, I think both sides are good. Now, Mrs. Bruin, Lizzie's mother, stands up, and she thinks that guns should be banned completely, and Mama is all for that. Farmer Ben, however, is red-faced with anger, because he needs his guns to shoot animals that are on his farm. So let me see if I can find this. There's a picture of Mama screaming right on. I love the notion that Mama was probably a bit of a hellraiser in her day as far as activism goes. She's very quick to scream right on. So the Bear family, apparently, this has never been brought up in a book before, and I wish Mike would bring it back. In the evenings, when they're trying to get the cubs ready for bed, they start hearing Farmer Ben shooting a shotgun. Oh dear, Mama would say when she heard the blam blam of neighbor Farmer Ben's shotgun. I wish Farmer Ben wouldn't do that. What do you want him to do? Asked Papa. Varmints are killing his chickens. And then later on in the plot, Farmer Ben stands up and he's like, look, I need my gun. I got to shoot the things that are coming after my chickens. I don't care about this culture of violence. There's animals that are killing my chickens. And it's funny, you know, don't mess. He says, I just want to say that it makes no never mind to me what you do about television, movies, or video games. Don't watch it. Don't go to them. Don't play them. But don't mess with my shotgun. Not unless you want to come over and protect my chickens from varmints. Mayor Honeycomb gets very upset about that. But it's actually Mr. Mosby. Mosby, the old hermit who lives at the edge of Forbidden Bog, who says, Mayor Honeycomb says, please, we're all friends here. And he says, friends, you say? Well, you're no friends of mine. I say you're a bunch of nosy busybodies sticking your nose into where ain't none of your business. As for guns, I got 37 of them, and I'm gonna keep them. It's a bear's natural-born right to bear arms, and if we get invaded by some of them Martians, don't come running to me for protection. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going home and mind my own business. That was my Mosby, ladies and gentlemen. Mosby. It's like he was right in the room. And there's an incredible illustration of Mosby with his arms crossed, angrily glaring at Mayor Honeypot with, if we get invaded by some of them Martians, don't come running to me for protection. And a word balloon of him saying that, but in the word balloon is a drawing of what looks to be communion-esque grays, but with like sort of big ears, like what bears would imagine the grays would look like. Sort of incredible. Probably if I got a tattoo now, it would be this on my back. Just huge on my back. Don't come at me. So the audience gets all hepped up. They show a film that is a cavalcade of violence. It is just image after image. If you've ever seen A Clockwork Orange, it's pretty much that. It's just violent image. People shooting machine, SWAT members shooting machine guns, guns floating in the air, gangsters shooting machine guns, hands shooting machine guns, atomic bombs going off, bears wrestling with each other, hypnotic swirls. It is literally what Alex DeLarge was forced to watch, or it's what the poor chimpanzee at the beginning of 28 Days Later was watching when the movie first starts, just this barrage of violent imagery. It includes bits from television shows, movies, and video games such as Grapplemania, Big Bear City Blue, which I guess is NYPD Blue, which I thought had been off the air by then, but maybe not. Lethal Gun, which I guess is Lethal Weapon, but Lethal Weapon refers to the fact that Riggs is a lethal, he's the lethal weapon, like his gun's not the lethal, like all guns are lethal. Lethal Gun, Natural Born Killer Dillers, which it just, that's great, I guess. Firing Squad, and Here's Blood in Your Eye, which is a great name for a video game. Have more violence in it, more shooting, more bullet holes, more blood, more pow, bam, zowie than the moms and dads in the audience had seen in a lifetime of nightmares. Everyone goes home. The next day, the kids are ticked off at how they've been paired up. But Teacher Bob wants the kids to learn from each other. So he's put Brother with Smirk, Bonnie with Vinny, Queenie with Milton, Trudy with Scuzz, Babs with Barry, Harry with Gil, Fred with Bertha, and Ferdy with Too Tall. Now, Brother doesn't think he's going to have anything in common with Smirk, but they quickly learn that they both like building model airplanes. So they're like, we'll just do the Wright brothers. We'll do the invention of the airplane. But Ferdy and Too Tall are having a problem. They don't know what they're going to do. Neither of them can agree. So let's see. Well, I'm not seeing it here, so I'll find the page I'm looking for. Ah, so Ferdy has a list of things he wants to do. Radar, cyclotron, sonar, or electron microscope. Too Tall's list is firecrackers, video games, paintball, or flush toilet. Again, I think flush toilet is an incredible idea, but there's a fifth idea that they both have: guns. Teacher Bob's like, guns? And the Cubs are like, look, you said we had to do an important invention that changed bear country, and is that wrong? You didn't say we couldn't do guns. And he's like, fine. I mean, I guess, but keep it under control. So Mama starts having nightmares. She has nightmares as only the Berenstain Bears can have nightmares. She's being chased by sentient guns. Guns with faces, guns with smiles, guns with eyes, guns with legs and arms, chasing her through bear country. She's terrified of guns. Mama is just absolutely terrified at the idea of guns in her community, even though the guns have been in her community for a while. And we haven't seen an uptick in gun violence yet. However, this is pushing Mama closer and closer towards a complete gun ban. And in the night, she wakes up because she thinks she hears prowlers outside. She looks out the window. She sees some figures wearing masks. She thinks they're trying to break into Papa's workshop to steal his tools. They call the cops. The cops come a running, literally guns blazing, like guns drawn. Like the cops are ready. And it's just a bunch of raccoons. It's just Mama is so on edge that she's just seeing prowlers everywhere. So Police Chief Bruno and Officer Marguerite show up with guns a-blazing. And Papa basically says, like, you see, if the cops didn't have guns, where would we be? And Mama's like, okay, maybe only the police should have guns, which is an interesting point of view, Mama. I don't want to be that guy, but if only the people... I understand that the Bear Country Police Department probably isn't that corrupt an organization, although they are directly under Mayor Honeypot, who is explicitly a corrupt mayor. I haven't heard any complaints about violence, but I do see that non-sentient animals, such as raccoons and the varmints on Farmer Ben's farm. Who knows what formerly English language speaking animals those used to be. We know that they don't have any rights. There's no rights for those animals in Bear Country anymore. So, I mean, are the Bear Country police fair police? I don't know. Should they be the only bears in Bear Country with access to firearms? Well, apparently written into their constitution is a right to bear arms. I'm not sure about that. I haven't read the Bear Constitution. I don't know if it's in the Bear Bill of Rights, but I mean, which is what it's called. I'm not sure if it's in the Bear Bill of Rights, but I think it might be. They do say the right to bear arms. At least that's what Mose Mosby says. He's like, it's our right, but he could be thinking of that as like sort of an inalienable right as opposed to like a law right. But in any case, Mom is like, okay, maybe only the police should have guns. Papa falls asleep. So Mama starts a group called Mothers Against Violence? No, Mothers Opposed to Violent Entertainment, which is Mama, Mrs. Bruin, and a dozen or so other mothers. They want to like they get petitions, they get signatures for a gun ban. They have a meeting at the Red Lantern, which I think is like the Red Lobster. They come up with a logo, like a real logo that looks sort of like an anti-fascist logo, which I'm kind of cool with, like all behind. It's like this light, these two, it's essentially the SS logo. It's like the two lightning bolts, but meeting at the bottom. So they form more of a V, but it is very like Third Reich lightning bolt, but with like a Ghostbuster slash through it. So I'm just going to read this as a pretty decent anti-fascist patch that Mama, in a better world, Mama and her, this would be an anti-fascist book and Mama would be totally on board with it. It's not, but, you know, I mean, Mama does say the only people who should have guns are the cops. So it's kind of the opposite of an anti-fascist a book. But, you know, the iconography is good. So the cubs are all working on their models. They're all working on their inventions. They're doing their best. And the idea behind Teacher Bob pairing Ferdy and Tootall, as well as all the other cubs, is that he paired opposites together because he thinks that they'll rub off on each other. And so, like, you know, like Barry Bruin's jocularity will rub off on Babs Bruno, who's a bit of a stick in the mud, and vice versa. She can calm him down a bit. Things like that. The more controlled kids, the kids who do well in school, will have a positive influence on like Scuzz and Smirk and Vinny. And to most of a degree, that holds true. The problem starts cropping up with Tootall and Ferdy, because what ends up happening isn't so much that Tootall becomes a better student. I mean, he's doing well in the project. It's that Ferdy starts becoming a little more like Tootall. Ferdy's smart. He knows how to lead. He has ideas. And he comes up with the best idea of them all, which is, hey, all the other kids are bringing models and examples of their subjects. You said we could do guns, so we're going to bring a gun to school. And Teacher's Bob is like, you can absolutely cannot bring a gun to school. I would get in so much trouble if I let you bring a gun to school. And Tootall's like, my dad has a gun. He keeps it in the junkyard. He uses it to chase away potential thieves when they try to break in. As we shall see, he doesn't necessarily fire a warning shot either. But Teacher Bob's like, you cannot bring a gun to the school. You can't bring a gun in school. And so Tootall and Ferdy put their heads together. And this is where we learn that Ferdy is actually getting more on the Tootall side, because Ferdy is like, you know what? I've thought it through. I have an idea, but we need a place where we can talk in private. Tootall brings Ferdy to his hideout, and Ferdy is like, okay, I figured it out. Scuzz, Smirk, and Vinny gets them all together, and he's like, the idea is that they're going to build guns that aren't real guns, but that function as real guns. They're basically giant rubber band guns, guns that shoot giant rubber bands. They don't have rubber bands, though, but they're going. But Ferdy's idea is like, we can get them from your dad's junkyard. He's not around, right? Like, he's in Tootall's like, yeah, he's out of town. And Ferdy's like, great, we'll sneak in there tonight, we'll steal them. We'll cut up some tires, we'll steal the. And Tootall's like, wait. And Scuzz, Smirk, and Vinny are like, heck yeah, let's go steal from Tootall's dad. And Ferdy's like, come on. And this balance of power that's usually the balance of power that Tootall is very proud of within his gang, which is that Tootall has all the power. He realizes that not only are his friends following Ferdy more than they're listening to him. He's listening to Ferdy because Ferdy is a very good talker. Ferdy is, we know this, Ferdy is aggressive. He wants to get his way. Once he settles on something, he goes for it and he gets it. And that kind of personality is tough to be around. Ferdy is also getting more aggressive, though. He's becoming obsessed with guns and proving to Teacher Bob that he can bring a gun to school. And if he's not allowed to, he'll figure out a loophole so that he can do it. Unfortunately, when they break into the junkyard, Tutal's dad has returned early from his trip, and he pulls his gun and shoots at them. Like, he just shoots at them. It's not even like a warning shot. It says, lights went on in the truck cab office, and there, big as life and twice as frightening, was Tutal's dad, back early from his trip to Big Bear City. He must have heard something because he was reaching for his big black rat gun. And I thought this was going to be like a shotgun or like a rifle. But no, it's a huge handgun. Like, it's like, I don't know what it is, but it's a huge handgun. Run, hissed Tutal in a panic. He thinks we're rats. Freeze, ordered Ferdy. Get down behind these tires and don't move. Blam, went the rat gun. It was the loudest blam any of them had ever heard. Smirk, Vinny, and Scuzz were shaking like leaves. Tutal was shaking like a bowl full of jelly in an earthquake. The only raider who remained calm, cool, and collected was Ferdy. So maybe he shot into the air, but why would he shoot into the air if he thinks it's rats? I assume he just pointed where he heard the noise and shot at them. They wait for him to go away. They get there. They cut an inner tube into big rubber bands. They put it all together. But Tutal has had it. Tutal is sick and tired of this kid who used to be his mortal enemy showing him up. So they have a plan on how they're going to get. And they're also just like, we can't just bring these fake guns to school. They look to their Teacher Bob will be very upset, which leads to the strangest, craziest, weirdest illustration in this book. Now, remember, if you're not watching along at home, the illustrations for the big chapter books are some of the best in the history of the Berenstain Bears. Like, I absolutely am not even kidding. I adore these illustrations. They're always action-packed. They move really well. The lighting in them is dynamic. The image of Tutal's dad pulling a gun on the children is wild. He looks terrifying. He's pointing a gun at a bunch of kids. They're amazing. And I always thought that they should do a book of just the illustrations from the chapter books because they're just so good. They're such great illustrations. But the best illustration of all, and I know I say this in every chapter book, but the best illustration of all is a very unassuming one. It's a picture of, so Ferdy decides he's going to sneak his gun into school under his jacket. But the kids all know he's been acting weird, and so they're all looking at him. And he has this jacket draped over his arm. There's a gun hidden in it. The picture that accompanies this part of the book, I assume Mike drew this. I'm not sure. I know he drew a lot of the chapter books. Maybe he drew it. I'm not sure. Whoever drew it, let me know if you're listening. Whoever drew it looks like a kid sneaking a gun into school. Like, it looks like a kid. Ferdy has a look on his face like he's not coming back from this. Like, this is not, he's not, at the end of the day, he will not be returning home after today. It looks like the lead up to a school shooting is what I'm saying. Even the looks on the kids' faces who see him arriving look like there's something off about Ferdy. And he just has this downcast. He doesn't look angry. He looks incredibly like turned inward and like concentrating and worried in a way that like the bears don't tend to get drawn. And he has his coat over his arm and you know there's a gun under it and it's wild and terrifying and I'm kind of in love with it. There's my second tattoo. So Ferdy gets to the school, but Tutal has a plan to get power back from Ferdy. Right before the morning bell goes off, Tutal hasn't shown up at school. And then all of a sudden, Tutal arrives in school, toting a gun, a big, black, dangerous-looking gun. A cry went up. He's got a gun! He's got a gun! The students at Bear Country School scatter every which way. Gun at the ready. Tutal marched through the schoolyard in search of Ferdy. By now, panic had spread throughout the yard, but one cub kept her head. As you might expect, it was Babs Bruno, the police chief's daughter. She ran to the schoolyard payphone, popped in a coin, and called her father's direct number. When he came on the phone, she said in a firm, clear voice, "It's an emergency, Dad. Tutal's got a gun, and we think he's after Ferdy." "We're on our way," shouted the chief. Now, he levels the gun at Ferdy, says, "This is what you get, you double-crossing little creep."
pulls the trigger. It's a super soaker. It's just a squirt gun. It's just a squirt gun. However, it's a squirt gun that looks like a real machine gun. And he shoots Freddy with it, and Freddy gets soaked. Freddy starts shooting rubber bands at Too Tall. They get so involved in their gunfight on campus, they don't notice that the police and the SWAT team have shown up. That's right. Police Chief Bruno has called in the big, no pun intended, guns, because a child showed up at school with a gun intending to shoot another child. And it was obvious enough that one of the students knew what was happening. It would be a day that was long remembered at Bear Country School. Many ideas were bumping up against each other in Teacher Bob's mind as he led his students into the school. No doubt Mr. Honeycomb would be calling another teacher's meeting on the subject of the culture of violence, and perhaps Miss Glitch would once again suggest... Oh, yes, I didn't even mention that Miss Glitch had recommended removing all violent literature from the library, and they were like, well, then we'd have to remove, like, Shakespeare and Robert Louis Stevenson, and that doesn't make any sense. And perhaps Mr. Grismire would once again suggest the school grounds be declared off-limits for all threats, taunts, and name-calling. And perhaps these ideas should be considered. But Teacher Bob has a job to do, a class to teach, and he has to get Ferdy out of his wet clothes. And no one's arrested. No one's hauled off to juvie. They just get talked to. And even Police Chief Bruno is like, you didn't... Because Ferdy's like, I invented this rubber band gun. And he's like, no, we used to build these things when I was a kid. So then we're at home. The last chapter is the bears at home. It's an introspective chapter. Papa's like, whoa, it was quite a day at school. It's all over TV and in the newspapers, and they were talking about it at the general store. And Mama's like, look, I don't want to upset the kid. Let's not talk about it. And he's like, look, the kids are already upset. We can talk about this. And I like that Papa says that. Like, it's important to talk about these things, even if the kids don't look upset. Something scary happened at school. And Sister says, yeah, it was scary. And Papa's like, why was it scary? It was just a toy gun. And she's like, yes, but it looked so real. And Too Tall looked so angry. It was really scary when he aimed it at Ferdy. But of course, it wasn't a real gun. It was a power soaker, and Ferdy just got wet. That's what Brother says. Then he's like, and everyone laughed, and it was funny at the time. And Papa's like, oh, it's not funny anymore? He's like, no, it got really serious when the police showed up. And then Sister says, again, it was really scary. And Mama just wants to, and it's interesting, Mama just wants to change the subject. She's like, will you please eat before the food gets cold? And then Papa's like, well, did we learn anything today? And Sister's like, yes, I learned that guns are bad and dangerous. And Papa's like, are they always bad and dangerous? And Brother's like, I mean, Gramps has guns. He uses them for target practice, but he keeps them locked up in his cache. And then Papa's like, well, okay, so when are guns dangerous? And Sister's like, when bad guys get them. And Papa's like, well, is Too Tall a bad guy? And Sister says, and Brother says, well, he can be. But that wasn't the problem today. The problem today was that he was very, very angry. And Papa's like, I think you have it. It's anger that makes guns dangerous. Anger to a gun is like a lit match to gasoline. When they're put together, bad things can happen. So a bear plus a gun is the same as a match to a gasoline. Whoops. I keep switching the picture. And this plays directly into what I wanted to talk about. With culture of violence theory. Where is it? In culture of violence theory, the idea for many years had been that exposure to violent television, to violent movies, to violence in video games, etc., caused violence, like, or it encouraged violence, or aggressive play, or normalization. But one thing, more recent studies, 2016, there was a study by Ferguson. Let me see if I can find their first name. Christopher Ferguson put together a lot. It was a study. It was a conglomeration of various studies, claims that were made at various times of 3,500 studies of media violence. Only 18 did not find effects. 10 to 30% of societal violence was caused specifically by media violence. But research over the past decade suggests that links between media violence and child aggression are less clear than previously thought. And the question is why? Like, what changed? He found that it's more about why someone plays or watches violent media. Like, if you're just blowing off steam, as opposed to you're feeling angry, than the content itself. Plus, there are some studies that show that violence in society actually goes down when violent media gets popular, maybe because it gives people something else to focus on. So there's these numbers, right? There's all these different causes and effects. But I like the idea it's intention. It's not what you're watching. It's why you're watching it. What are you, what is the intention of the viewer or the player when they go into this? How is it that some people can be more affected? Well, why are some people watching? Why are some people playing? It's not just violent TV or games that makes kids aggressive. It's also about why they're drawn to them and how they process it. And I like the fact that this book deals with it on those levels. And I like the fact that it comes back to gun violence being a product of the intention behind the gun owner and the gun user. I know plenty of people who own guns. I'm not a gun owner myself. I do not like guns. Sister Bear actually says in the story at one point, I just wish all the guns would just disappear from the earth, and what a wonderful world that would be. But they're like, but Farmer Ben uses guns. He needs them to keep the varmints away from his chickens. And, you know, Gransley Gramps has guns, but he just uses them for target practice. And he's very responsible. He keeps them all locked up. But Too Tall had a gun today. It was a fake gun, but it was a gun, and it was terrifying when he had it. And he was very angry, and he was hunting a student. And this goes into notions of people who use guns to take their own life, how that's usually a spur-of-the-moment thing, and when you have a gun in the house, that is more likely to be the outcome of an episode like that, because the gun is on hand, and it's very fast, very easy to use. So the idea through this 2016 paper is that the question is, should our focus shift from blanket restrictions on violent media to understanding individual motivations and contexts? And how does that reshape, you know, the way we approach parenting, education, public policy? And I think that's important. I think that's what, in a roundabout way, the culture of violence theory is saying. And here's where we come to the 4 points of culture of violence theory, which is that it's based on media influence, social learning, systemic factors, and the cumulative effects of the imagery. So it's not just kids watching violent cartoons. It's, you know, like the observation, imitation. It's why they're watching them, when they're watching them. Who are these children? What's their home life like? What's their socioeconomic status like? Do they have options? You know, do they have like a lot of socializing? Do they have friends? How do their parents respond to this material? Is it seen as proscriptive or descriptive entertainment? It's all these different things. I read a book on parenting years ago about violence play in children, and the person who wrote it, I cannot remember his name, a child psychologist, was talking about how, like, children have to play violent games. Like, they're supposed to play violent games. That's how they learn to control violence. That's how they learn to, that's how they confront terrifying things in the world. Kids will hear about something scary on the news, and then they play it. They play act it. It's how children take command of the things that scare them. It's through play. It's one of the many beautiful things about play. You pretend to kill someone, and then they get back up. You can pretend to get killed, and then you get back up. You have now conquered this concept in your head. You're not delusional. You understand that it's fake. When parents stop their children from playing games like that, it actually puts an importance on them that these games are more real than the children think, that these games are actual violence. But the children are like, no, this is a ritual. This is like a thing we do to dispel the violence, to dispel the fear. Now, of course, some kids get a little out of hand. Some kids do hurt each other. Kids get hurt. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. What I'm saying is culture of violence theory suggests that there are many different factors as to why kids and adults, people watch violent media, play violent games, and how they interact with each other afterwards. But we also see this, you know, it's not just children. You know, this kind of thing has been the blame for domestic violence. In fact, this comes out of the theory of structural violence and also out of the notion of the rape myth, which is prejudicial, stereotyped, and false beliefs about sexual assaults, rapists, and rape victims. It's all part of rape culture, which is tied into the culture of violence. Like, these are all peas in a pod, these notions that there are things that we, and I know no one who does not subscribe to the notion of you know, sexual violence culture, that we tend to dismiss it, we romanticize it, we mythologize it, we blame the victim. That's true. But we're also not saying that, like, these things cause it to happen. We're just saying that they have an influence on our response to them. And I think that's what cultural violence is as well. Like the notion of this violence in our culture isn't that it's making us more violent. It's that it's, and I won't even say it's like it's desensitized. I hate the word desensitized. I think it's sort of lost a lot of its meaning. It's gotten us more accepting of violence as an answer, more accepting of violence as a first response, because we see it a lot. Again, and I don't think that there. I think that there is. I mean, there are studies that show that this is true. That's how, that the more we see of it, the more we react that way. It's like it gives us permission to behave that way. And when I was a kid, I watched a lot of violent stuff. I watched a lot of, well, let's finish this book because the book's not actually done. There's a couple of pages left. It's anger that makes him dangerous. So they all sit to watch TV and cartoon theater is on featuring Cunning Coyote and the Bird Runner, which is their version of Wile E. Coyote and the Road Runner. And Mom was like, wait, that's like the most violent show of all. And he's like, it's not violent, it's funny. And Mama sighs, and she sits down with dessert and joins the family to watch these incredibly violent cartoons. And it says she couldn't help giggling as she watched Cunning Coyote try to smash Bird Runner with a rock, blow him up with a big firecracker, and hit him over the head with a giant hammer. As she watched Cunning Coyote and Bird Runner go through the paces, she realized that while the culture of violence was a big and important problem, it wasn't going to be a simple one to solve. Fair enough. This is a children's Berenstain Bears book. It's not a college paper. It's not a cultural treatise. It's just trying to get the conversation started, which I think it does a very good job of. To sum up, the studies that I looked at say that there is a correlation between frequent exposure to violent video games, movies, TV shows that increase aggressive thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. And that these effects persisted across different cultural contexts, highlighting the universal nature of the issue. But it's cumulative, and then later studies showed that it wasn't as black and white as everyone pretends it is, that A leads to B. That there are so many other factors you have to keep in mind, and that like heart health, you know, one problem thing isn't going to cause a stroke or a heart attack. It's all these things together that, if left unchecked, could erupt. So when I was a kid, I used to watch violent cartoons. I watched violent movies. I watched a lot of Saturday morning cartoons. I watched things like that. And one thing my parents did, the idea was that if my sister or I were going to watch something, my parents would watch it too. Not like they wouldn't like preview it for us, but they would sit while we watched to see what we were watching. Also, there were only like three networks back then, and for a long time we didn't even have a VCR. So my parents watched everything, and then they would talk about it with us. So when we'd watch literally Bugs Bunny cartoons, Wile E. Coyote, the Roadrunner, when I was really little, my parents would always say, my mom especially, I remember her saying, like, you know, this is just a cartoon, that if something like this really happened, a person would get hurt. But they don't get hurt because they're cartoons, and it's just for fun. This isn't real. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty smart, but I'm glad she did that. And they would also just be with us when we watched things, because my sister and I were pretty good at judging when something was too much for us and we would get up and leave. Or, you know, if something was violent and we watched it as a family, it didn't feel out of control. It felt safe. Like, okay, we're watching this. This is just make-believe. This is a story that's being shown to us. And we watched a lot of pretty heavy stuff when I was a kid. Like, I remember, I mean, I don't know, I wasn't like a baby, but I remember being like a young adolescent and watching like Jagged Edge with my parents. Like, it was pretty intense stuff, like rated R thrillers. I went to go see, my dad took me to go see Total Recall in the theater. I saw a Paul Verhoeven movie in the theater when I was a kid, because my dad was like, that's an action movie. And we saw it, and it was very violent, but I was just like, right on. Good story. Good premise. The violence sold it. It's also, I mean, this comes back to like, you know, media literacy, media hygiene, knowing how to watch things, knowing how to talk about things. It's all part of being a parent, man. But that was the Berenstain Bears, No Guns Allowed. I finally covered it. It's not a funny book. It's not one that I like want to sit around and make fun of. It's a good book to talk about. Like, it's about gun violence, but not just gun violence. It's just about violence and our response to it and what is scary about guns. And I think in this day and age, it is scary. And also, just because Too Tall sometimes does bad things, it doesn't make him evil or a bad guy. And we're glad that he didn't have access to a real gun, because that's when things can get dangerous, right? That's when kids are kids, and that's when their brains can sort of like go off and they do things stupid that hurt people. So, yeah, you know, I know Two-Ton Grizzly wouldn't want his son to do anything violent. Two-Ton's a big guy, and he's angry, but he's not a violent guy. He did shoot at a bunch of kids in this book, but that's beside the point. No guns allowed. And they weren't allowed. But the book was about more than guns, about the culture of violence. What are your thoughts on the culture of violence? What have you read about it? What are your favorite examples of it? Your favorite books that cover the subject? Or, you know, TV shows or specials? Do you have a favorite movie that's about, you know, not even necessarily just gun or school violence, but just violence in general? You know, movies or stories, books, songs, music that really make you think about the impact the American culture of violence or the worldwide culture of violence, you know, has on our daily lives. If you have any suggestions, let me know. Write it in the comments. If you're watching on YouTube, I'd love to hear from you, hear your ideas. But Berenstain Bears, No Guns Allowed, that is the last of the big chapter books. I finally finished them. Finally did it. I want to go back and do them all again because I forget that these are my favorite Berenstain Bears books. I think this is the Bears at their best. I think this is the Bear writing at its best. I love the illustrations. I love how just off the wall some of the stories get. It's the Bear Scouts chapter books that are more off the wall. The Berenstain Bears big chapter books are more grounded in like just sort of junior high reality, but the big chapter books for the Bear Scouts are the ones that are based on the cartoon and have like Big Paw and Raffish Ralph and all that stuff. So yes, No Guns Allowed. If you want a copy of it, you're gonna have to buy it used. Sorry, book is out of print. I have a digital copy of it that I bought a long time ago. I can't find it for sale anymore. Maybe I'm just looking in the wrong place. I think I bought it off like Kobo or something. It's not, I couldn't find it, but maybe I just looked in the wrong place. I don't know. If you can find it digitally, great. Grab it. Read it. The illustrations are beautiful. I just love them. So Berenstain Bears, No Guns Allowed. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for being a part of this. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching me on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. Leave a comment in the comments. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from everybody. This is really the place to come if you want to talk about my show. Even if you watched it, just pop on over to YouTube and leave a comment. Like if you listen to it, pop on over to YouTube and then maybe watch some of me moving around and you're like, all right, there's another way to watch the show. Because you get to see pictures as well. I put pictures up. So, yeah. All right. Thank you so much once again. You're wonderful. And I'll see you all next time. Deep in Bear Country.